What is up, everybody? Thank you all for joining me in the latest Mordcast, part of the CSGN MHS Network. I am, of course, your host, Jeff Morton. Okay, the Denver Nuggets beat the Miami Heat in Game 3 of the NBA Finals, 109-94. Basically, a dominant second half. The Nuggets went up, I think we're up by 5 going into halftime. And the Nuggets, really on the backs of Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, prevailed in a game that was really weird. 3/5 of the Nuggets' starting lineup didn't seem to be able to function offensively. I think they did well defensively, but particularly Michael Porter Jr. and KCP still are struggling with their shot. And Aaron Gordon is, you know, he's not the most reliable shooters, but he wasn't able to produce on a high level. This was really about Murray and Jokic. Murray had 34, Jokic had 32, 21 and 10, which is a insane stat line. And I'll get more to Jokic. I'm going to save the Jokic talk to the second half of the podcast. But, you know, the interesting thing about the Denver Nuggets is that, and this is something that I wanted to get into. I almost podcasted about this yesterday, but I gotta do it. And this is something that has been bugging me, and I need to address this. And I think this is a symptom of Nuggets fans being Nuggets fans and Nuggets media being Nuggets media. There was a bit of a paralysis by analysis going on after the Nuggets lost game 2. And I think kind of everyone fell into the same trap. That trap being the Nuggets... there was something fundamentally wrong about the way the Nuggets approached the game. And a lot of that has to do with Michael Malone and his Michael Malone way calling out the team, quote unquote, which was really Michael Porter Jr. Let's face it. That's exactly who it was directed at. Doing that after the game, it kind of shaped everyone's kind of weird eye-twitching freak-out that people had after game 2. And what people forgot is that the Nuggets, through the second and third quarters of game 2, basically dominated the game and fell victim to what the Nuggets always do, which is they got complacent. And they not only were they complacent, which is what they did in the fourth quarter of game 1, but, they also fell victim to the Heat, literally making every shot they took, which is not something that's not something you can count on, in an NBA finals experience. It's maybe even something that you can count on all the way through the your portion of the bracket. But once you get to the finals, that's not something that you can count on to carry you through. And really what happened in game 2 is a stretch in the first quarter and in the fourth quarter, the Heat really relied on next level three-point shot making is really what it was. And the Nuggets committing a couple of really boneheaded mistakes. KCP did it twice. And of course, Michael Porter Jr. was the one who got the blame for all of that, which is, you know, because Malone is, I think, incapable of blaming anyone else on the team. That's neither here nor there. So the Nuggets were going into this game 3, you know, that game was Sunday and this game was Wednesday. And I'm wondering, and it was perplexing me why people weren't just looking at the game like they should. Which was the Nuggets kind of did what the Nuggets do, and they let slip the rope a bit. Their defense through three quarters in game 2 wasn't that bad. It was very specifically the fourth quarter, and it was and the Heat and I always wanted to really I kind of said this in my wrap up after the last game, but. The Heat literally you hit everything, and when I put this in perspective here, is there another time that you have been who's listening to this podcast right now, is there another time you've seen expert shot making like this from a team that wasn't the Golden State Warriors. Well, it was the two games the Nuggets played against the Phoenix Suns in games 3 and 4 in Phoenix in their second round series. Sometimes that happens. And I'm not trying not to lecture Nuggets fans or Nuggets media at this point, because sometimes people just, you get in the playoffs and you get tunnel vision. Okay. The coach, Michael Malone, is very famous for having tunnel vision. The Nuggets, if you notice in this game, they may have changed the way they set screens in this game, but they literally didn't do anything else but what they always do. This is not a Nuggets team that makes grand adjustments. I think they tightened up a little and got out the shooters better, and the chief shit-getter from the game two, Michael Porter Jr., actually played a very good third quarter defensively, even though his shot wasn't falling. And, of course, he gets banished to the bench. But this time, it wasn't for a bad reason, because Christian Brown came in and gave them a lot of energy, and I'm going to get to him in a bit. Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray end up scoring 66 of the Nuggets' 109 points. So majority of the Nuggets' points were scored by two people. And, of course, Jokic and Murray each had 10 assists. So that's another, you know, that's the majority of the Nuggets' points right there. Basically, were either because of Jamal and Jokic passing or scoring. But sometimes that happens. And I think in the NBA, this is a thing that happens. But put this into a little bit of perspective. Michael Porter Jr. was 1 of 7 shooting the entire game and didn't hit a three-pointer. Okay. If he hits more of those shots, this game is a 20-point win. Over 20-point win. If KCP managed to be more of an offensive presence besides hitting two shots, this is even greater win. The Nuggets were so reliant on Jokic and Murray because they were reliant on Jokic and Murray. This is what the Nuggets do, right? This wasn't a deviation from anything. The Heat kind of, and I do mean kind of in game two, bothered Jamal Murray. But I need to reiterate this. The Heat played a perfect fourth quarter, 100% perfect fourth quarter, and they won by 3 in game two. And why people weren't drawing a correlation between that and the two victories that Phoenix got in the second round, I don't know why. And it was bugging me, and it still bugs me why we do this. I think we get caught up. It's because too many people listen to Michael Malone, and I always say this. Don't listen to him after games. Just ignore everything he has to say after a game and listen to what he says like after a practice, because he's more thoughtful then. Even when he's pissed off, he's more thoughtful after a practice than he is after a game. So, you know, the Nuggets went into this game and just, you could tell from the very beginning, it wasn't about energy. It was just, they were doing what they always do. And look, I think our tendency to overanalyze things muddies some very distinct realities. The Heat could come back in game four and do what they did in the fourth quarter of game two and hit literally everything they throw up there. It could happen. Gabe Vincent and Max Strus could have another insane shooting night. Okay, and Duncan Robinson could happen again. But when you rely on the concept of perfection, you're not going to win. And this is something that has been true to basically every finals run ever. If you have to be perfect, your chances and your margin are completely, it's not just thin, it's almost non-existent, because you are admitting at that point that you have an inherent disadvantage, which they do. One of the things that the Heat were able to do in getting up over every team they played in the Eastern Conference was they won the first game. It's kind of like what the Lakers did. They won the first game because they never had home court advantage, and that allowed them to kind of, they didn't coast like the Lakers did. The Lakers would get into game two and just kind of not play and then count on getting back to LA and pressing their advantage there. The Nuggets didn't allow them to do that. It was similar with the Heat. They would win game one in all of these series. And what that would do was allow them to set the advantage. Okay. This is the way series are different from regular season games. Okay. If you are able to set the advantage if you are a team who, I mean, unless you're the 2001 Philadelphia 76ers who played their most, very specifically, Allen Iverson played the most perfect game he ever played in his life, in game one of the NBA Finals that year. Most of the time, if you win that game one, it's not as what you think, because the Nuggets did that a couple times against the Spurs in the 2000s when they played them in the playoffs. I think 2005 and 2007, the Nuggets won game one of both of those series, and it didn't work out that way. It hasn't translated this year. This year, with the way we look, and particularly with the modern NBA, with the way we look at rest, these series have been really decided by whoever wins game one, because you can do different things when you are a game one winner. You set the bar, and particularly if you're a road team, you need to win game one this year. I mean, that the Lakers did it, and then the Heat have done it. The Nuggets won game one and didn't play their best game. The Nuggets lost game two and didn't play their best game. They won game three I wouldn't even think they played their best game in game three, I'll be honest with you. Their defense was quote unquote better, but I don't think they weren't doing anything different than they'd already done. This Nuggets team did not adjust. They just played Nuggets basketball, and that was it. And just with a little more reliance on Jokic and Murray. But this wasn't a big adjustment that the Nuggets made. The Nuggets don't move in and out personnel other than benching Michael Porter Jr. for half the third and all the fourth. Now let's get to Christian Brown. Christian Brown has been great in this particular series, and I knew going into it he would be good. He was not as good and would not have been as good against a Lakers team. In fact, he was benched for games in the Lakers series, mostly because the Nuggets in this scenario, that Lakers team was a different kind of defense. They didn't play a ton of zone. And Christian Brown is good, particularly with as many teams in the NCAA that play zone. In fact, if you were playing like Syracuse, they would play like eight different types of zone. So if you play a college team, this is where going to college helps you. A lot of those teams play zone because no one in college can shoot. So what happens is you need to have a player be a zone breaker. And Christian Brown is the Nuggets zone breaker. If Michael Porter Jr. is not shooting at a high percentage, he's not going to be a quote zone breaker. He is he's just trying to get rebounds and play defense at that point, because he's almost 6'11", folks. He's slow. Christian Brown is smaller, 6'7", 6'8", and he he's one of those high floor guys that every championship team needs, a guy that's just going to go for balls out for 20 minutes at the max. And that is what happened. Christian Brown went balls out for that long, and it really lifted the Nuggets. He scored 16 points, and every one of those 16 points was needed, because three-fifths of the Nuggets' starting lineup was really terrible offensively. In championship teams, you need guys who can step up like that, and it's in this specific series, with Christian Brown being a zone-breaking type of player with as hard as he cuts to the basket. What happens is, he came in and just kind of messed up the Miami Heat. And every one of, like I said, every one of those 16 points was needed. The Nuggets won by 15. And you could tell the Heat, even, I mean, this was another situation where in game two, it was like the Heat didn't know how to handle Christian Brown because he busts their zone. And if there's anything that the Heat have as a coup de grace, it's their use of zone. They're a small team that has to use zone. Okay, Jokic is going to get what he gets. I mean, he's a zone breaker too, but he needs two. Jamal Murray is not a zone breaker. He does really poorly against the zone, and this is really how the Heat have been able to guard him: is that they zone him up, and then it ends up with Jamal heaving a 29-foot off balance shot. It sometimes goes in. You need a couple zone breakers on a team, and this is really something that the Nuggets have been able to do with Christian Brown in the lineup. No slight to Michael Porter Jr., who's having a terrible offensive series. So Jokic comes in and he gets a guy like Christian Brown aside him, and he can really exploit that. Now let's talk a bit about Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray had his best game of the series. Jamal, when he gets going, he sometimes needs to hit difficult shots. Jamal is as I've said this on the podcast many, many, many times at this point, in the 7 years that Jamal's been here, you can feel and see every fiber of Jamal Murray's being going into basketball. He's one of those guys where the basketball game looks hard and everything goes in, but you can feel Jamal working. And some of that is Jamal needs to have that work to get him going. And Gabe Vincent coming in and really pressuring Jamal up the court, grabbing him a lot, and doing all of that stuff that really annoys Jamal, actually got Jamal into the flow of the game. That always backfires on teams when they do that sort of thing. Jamal thrives on teams trying to fundamentally harass him because that gets him into what he does best, which is making tough shots. And I think that really unlocked Jamal yesterday, and he became the Jamal of the Lakers series, and it's, Jokic is always there. It's very clear in the first three games, they're not going to do anything to stop Jokic. If the Lakers couldn't do it with Anthony Davis, there's no way in hell that the Miami Heat were going to be able to do it. So the Nuggets have been taking advantage of that, and they needed another guy last night, who was able to break through that and hit tough shots, and Murray was able to do that. See, where the Heat have a fundamental problem, and you saw that within the way the Nuggets rebounded. Michael Porter Jr. had 7 rebounds, only had 2 points, but he had 7 rebounds. Gordon had a bunch of rebounds. Jokic had 20 rebounds. Jamal Murray had 10 rebounds. The Nuggets, what is it? Hashtag too small. The Nuggets are just a lot bigger than the Heat. And sometimes it is just hard to rebound against a team that is fundamentally larger than you. And that is another way to kind of break what you do. The Nuggets are always going to have this advantage, whether the Heat hit a bunch of shots or not. This is why the Heat need to play perfect fourth quarters like they did in game two, because the Nuggets would be getting every rebound and not allowing them second chance points. Like Bam Adebayo thrives on second chance points. He's got very few of those in this series. So anyway, I've gone long this segment. On the second half, I'm going to talk about Nikola Jokic, his answer to a question. A couple times he was pressed the question about what he did and why the NBA hates that sort of thing. But we'll be getting to that right after the break. The NBA really, really dislikes Nikola Jokic's nonchalance with his own achievements. How do I explain this? I've been talking the entire playoffs. I've been talking a lot about how Jokic is doesn't do what superstars do in the league. He doesn't do the endorsements. He only does the mandatory interviews. He goes back home. He is a family. In the summer, he goes back to Serbia, doesn't film commercials. He doesn't help the NBA out with its promotion of him. And the NBA is very aware, and that's I got to point this out to you people. The NBA is very aware that Jokic is one of the best players in the league, and as of these finals, probably the best player in the league. They're very cognizant of this, and they are completely at a loss with how to promote him in this age of social media, in this age of brand and all of that stuff. Then the NBA is so, as I've said over and over and over again, the NBA is so used to players just going out and getting their own in many different ways on the court and in the advertising world. And that really helps them promote that athlete. Their commercials get played during finals, that they during the offseason, they get publicity. These sorts of things happen. Jokic just won't do that. Jokic doesn't participate in the traditional NBA game. Some of that has to do with the NBA's laziness. The NBA is fundamentally lazy. They want these players to do this, so it makes it easy on them to do their jobs. But on the second second part of that is kind of Jokic just it's I can understand why it's frustrating. Jokic was asked about how it feels to be breaking Wilt Chamberlain's being the first person ever to get 30, 20, and 10 in a playoff game or a finals game, and Jokic went, "It's just a stat. All I care about is the win." And he said that basically in different words twice. The NBA hates this. The NBA fundamentally hates this. They want acknowledgement of the weight of what he accomplished. Jokic refuses to do that. He refuses to do that. And some of that, I mean, is not... I'm going to break some hearts here. Jokic is not, quote-unquote, humble. To get to this point, you are not humble. You have to have an ego. Jokic has an ego, always has. The issue is the willingness for the league to help an athlete that helps themselves promote. Jokic is not that kind of guy. Now, people have drawn the comparison with Tim Duncan. One of the problems with Tim Duncan is that Tim Duncan had the personality, I've said this before, he had the personality of wet cement. He was very gray. There was just nothing from him. You couldn't, even if you, then the NBA wanted to, they couldn't do anything with it because he had no personality. Jokic has a personality. He is just, I wouldn't say opposed, but he is just not impressed by the NBA's life, okay? And not being impressed by the NBA life is a problem for the NBA. The NBA needs you as a player to want to participate in what the NBA culture is. And a lot of that is self-promotion. And Jokic's refusal to do that, which is, once again, it's not done for any sort of altruistic thing. He's a team first guy. But he just doesn't want to. And some of that is handicapping the league. The league desperately wants him to do something. And you know, let me tell you something, folks. The Nuggets do, too. The Nuggets would love it if Jokic was like this big... I mean, even in Denver, they would love it if he was like getting out there doing endorsements and all of this stuff. They would love it. Jokic, it's fundamentally wired a different way. He just doesn't... I mean, some of it's stubbornness, but some of it is just like this is a job to him. It's a very Eastern European thing. This is a job. He goes to his job... And the stuff that he does for fun, his lifestyle, is his horses and going back home to Serbia. Those are things where he considers to be fun. And what he does with the league is just him going to work, like taking your lunch pail to work. So it's basically if you had a father who, like my dad, who worked at the Rocky Mountain News for 30-something years, 35 years, what he did there was just work. He would come home, and everything else about his life was different. It was two separate things. In the NBA, the NBA to be your lifestyle. The league wants the NBA to be your lifestyle. They want everything around the league to be your lifestyle. They want it to be part of your being. And with Jokic, it's only part of what he does. And you can see that with the NBA All-Star Game, where he just looks so uncomfortable. Not during the festivities, but mind you. And this is another thing people miss. Jokic loves the everything else around the NBA All-Star Game. He hates the game itself. One of the reasons he hates the game itself is because it's not a serious game. Okay? It's not part of what he considers to be work. So he has struggled so much in getting himself into a game that is fundamentally about no defense and entertainment, just being entertaining, just throwing shots up, just going up and down the court, not caring, and doing all of that stuff. He just is very uneasy with that sort of thing. But he likes everything else, and I can tell you 100% for a fact, he likes everything else around the NBA All-Star Game. So the NBA has a very hard time with a guy who is very clearly, at this point, the best player in the entire league. They have a very hard time with a guy who just doesn't want to participate in everything else. So, with your own job, maybe there's someone you know who's very good at what their job, but you cannot get to, he doesn't do anything else. He doesn't go to company picnics. He doesn't do any of the group things that a company does. He just goes home. Now, that's completely up to Jokic, and that's what he wants to do. The NBA wants desperately to promote him, and Jokic doesn't want to be part of that. This is 100%, not 100%, it's about 60% Jokic just not wanting to deal with it. You could tell it in his answers. He just is so put out by, he doesn't understand, some of this is cultural, a lot of this is cultural, he just doesn't understand, I think at this point he fundamentally doesn't understand Americans, and he doesn't understand the way we promote ourselves out here. And if you talk to a lot of people who are from specifically very Eastern Europe, it's that part of that self-aggrandization, the bigging yourself up all the time aspect that people from other countries are just very uneasy with. And that is, it's not xenophobia from the Americans' part. It's that we look at that and we don't understand why you won't big yourself up, why you won't be in the commercials, why you won't be part of that NBA industrial complex. Jokic just refuses to do it. So the NBA desperately wants him to be able to, they want him to be the face of the league. The NBA does not, I've talked to so many people through these playoffs, they want Jokic to be the face of the league. They just have no clue. Some of that is the NBA laziness. I would say a good 45-40% of this is the NBA is just clueless about certain things. They are clueless about promoting people who don't go out and get their own. They don't get their own, basically. They're just completely clueless with it. They have no idea how to promote people who just go out and just do their job. And they just have no idea. And some of it is Jokic refusing on the other end. So it's this detente. The NBA really does want, I mean, folks, I'm telling you, I've talked to enough people. The NBA wants to promote him. They want him to be the a face, if not the face of the league. They see what he does. It's just, they don't know how, and Jokic refuses to participate. And that's where we're at right now, folks. And he's doing it on a big stage. He's doing it on a big stage right now. And the ratings for these finals have been great. They have been great. Defying expectations that were, quite frankly, ludicrous to going into the finals. The ratings have been great. So people are seeing him. But these people won't be seeing Jokic in any of their commercials. They won't be doing that. So this is a fascinating thing. This is going to be going on for the rest of Nikola Jokic's career, this battle. We could decry the crash capitalism of it. We can get frustrated at how fundamentally lazy the league is. But we can also look at the other side and say Jokic just doesn't want it. And if he doesn't want it, it makes it really hard to promote him. It really does. Even Patrick Mahomes, who's in Kansas City, is all over commercials, right? But the NBA, the NFL does a better job of promoting its whole league than the NBA does. So it'll be interesting to see. Okay, thank you all for joining me on the latest Morecast. I'm going to be back on Saturday with a post Game 4 wrap up. Hope to see you then. Goodbye.